Ice Cube's Big 3 is back. The most competitive basketball league on earth is on CBS this Saturday. Big 3 All-Star Dwight Howard and the LA Riot take on Greg Monroe and the Dallas Power. Then Coach Rick Mahorn, Sensation Nasir Khor, and the Detroit Amps look to protect home court against back-to-back MVP Michael Beasley and the defending champs Miami 305. The game played the way you love. Watch live Saturday on CBS at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and catch replays on BET.
Ladies and gentlemen, we must start the beat with a correction. You know, right here on the Austin and Berm Show, we pride ourselves on transparency and accuracy. And on Monday, in a discussion about the point spread for Ohio State and Texas in the season opener, we said that it was 6, but that's just not right. Ohio State is favored by 3 points. And on a Thursday, that makes perfect sense. That's the exact number of topics that we talk about on a Three Things Thursday. So glad we could clear that air. And I'm thrilled that it worked out that we could just tee off the show with another trifecta of points.
Well, okay. Well, my apologies. I want to be the first to point out that I'm blaming AI for that. Oh. Because you see, all I did was Google Ohio State and Texas point spread. And the first thing that pops up is the AI overview, which is apparently Google's way of trying to like avoid doing its job, which is to search the internet for other places. Remember when Google was a search engine and not a smarty pants? Anyway, it says in the upcoming... Oh, that's why. Okay. See, this is my problem because I was doing it on the fly. So I'm going to take some heat here.
No.
It says in the upcoming college football playoff semifinal, the spread is Ohio State -6. So it's not reflecting the fact that these two juggernauts are playing each other in 6 weeks. So that's a combination of me and Google really dropping the ball. But I'm glad it worked out for your three thoughts lead in, because I am, as I say every week, I don't know where you come up with them. But I'm glad that this one occurred just naturally and gave you some opportunity to dive in.
Me too. And the point was not to shame you for getting that number wrong, or to shame AI or Google, which used to be a proper website and now is just, I don't know what, a mishmash of Wi-Fi jibber jabber. The point was that I had to continue the bit and you gave me an opening, and I'm thankful for that. One thing we've not done, believe it or not, Berm, is really dive into Ohio State's schedule. And I thought maybe this would be a good time to do that, because once we get to Monday, flying out to Las Vegas for Big Ten Media Days, we're going to be right back into talking ball season, which I am very much looking forward to. But I think there are some opportunities to look at this Ohio State schedule, which is one of the top 20 in terms of difficulty, depending on which exact metric you're using. But
not AI, not Google's AI metric.
No, we did not use Google's strength of schedule metric, which you obviously can't trust. But if you look around with PFF, if you use S&P Plus, others, you can find Ohio State getting a lot of credit for the strength of the schedule. And I think that that may surprise people, because if we're zoomed out for the big picture, we've talked about the games that are in the horseshoe, and it's like, well, you have Texas and Penn State, and then clearly you have to go on the road and win the rivalry game. It's like there's not a ton else on there, but this schedule is a little bit tougher than it might be perceived at first glance.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky. And I think that you open with Texas and everyone sees that as the marquee matchup. And, you know, obviously that's a top three game in the country. Then you have Grambling in Ohio and people will laugh at those. But it's the games that are not really going to be focused on after that that I think are worth some more review. And that is, of course, going to Washington is going to be a challenge. It's a hard spot to play, period. It's a program with Jed Fish in his second year there that is it's got some pieces that and a proud program. Minnesota is not a bad football team and is going to be a difficult game in the horseshoe. And then you have to go to Illinois, which has the potential, I think, to be a top 15 team almost the entire season. Really good quarterback there. Again, weird place to play. And then you play at Purdue, which is like a nightmare location for Ohio State always. You know, and even
not always.
Like, well, it's a nightmare. Regardless, if the outcome's not always a nightmare, the location's a nightmare, period. Yeah, despite the beautiful changes they made to Ross-Ade Stadium in the last few years, which I actually quite enjoyed the last time we were there. And then you have to go to Wisconsin. That's going to be a night game against Luke Fickell. Like, there's some sneaky pieces to this puzzle for Ohio State. And I look at it now and you think about how just how huge of a weight must be off Ryan Day's shoulders that this schedule comes on the heels of winning a national championship and not on the heels of a season that ended with a loss to Michigan and then a loss in the first round to Tennessee.
Do you have information that I don't about the Wisconsin game? Because I was told that was almost certainly not going to be at night.
I don't know. Every time we go to Wisconsin, it's a night game. So if you are better off in those in that area than me, but I'm just making broad stroke assumptions because that's the way it always works.
Yeah, no, I think we're actually both home and away for Ohio State staring at the possibility of, brace yourself, like six straight noon games.
So that's an 11 a.m. start. So we could be looking at back-to-back 11 a.m. starts in central time zone for Ohio State against Illinois and Wisconsin. That is beautiful.
Highly possible. I think it'll probably be 2:30 at Camp Randall, but we'll see. What I don't want to get too far ahead of things, but it's on the table that it could be another lengthy run of noon games, which I think also plays into where I am with thing number one, which was the sneakiest part of Ohio State's schedule, or the sneakiest game. I don't like the word trap game because for Ohio State specifically, every single week they're going to get an opponent's best shot. And I think that we're past the point of the Buckeyes dealing with complacency, overlooking opponents, letting things slip. But if that's the way that you view it and you want to think about it in those terms, for me, Berm, I think Illinois is that spot, and you kind of teed it up for me with a likelihood that they could be in the top 15 all year. Their schedule sets up where that could be unbeaten versus unbeaten, and the most buzzed atmosphere that they've had in Champaign, and certainly my time covering Ohio State, but maybe going back 20 years or so to a game that I'm sure you don't want to talk about. But
well, we don't. I don't know what game you're talking about.
Okay. Well, don't worry about it then.
Yeah. All I remember about that season is that Ohio State played in a national championship game. And so, whatever happened to get them there, I completely forgot.
Okay.
Also, good. Whatever happened in that national championship game, I also conveniently forgot.
Well, that's helpful for a show where we're supposed to be talking about Ohio State and I guess the future, maybe not history. But I do think that it's Illinois. And there's a compelling case to be made that it's the following week if Ohio State goes and handles business at Illinois. You have another meat grinder of a road trip out there to play Luke Fickell and the Badgers, where you know that they're going to be well coached. You know that they're tough and they have a sort of blueprint formula to try and run the football and play good defense and shorten the game. We've seen that from a number of Big Ten opponents from Ohio State over the last few years, some with more success than others. But to me, I think Illinois is just the more talented team, which is why the front end of that back-to-back is where I have the sneaky radar on alert.
Yeah, I think, the Illinois game, Brett Bielema is a really good coach, and people could have whatever opinion you have about him from his time at Wisconsin. He is a man that is boisterous. He likes to chat. He likes to speak his mind. I think it's great. I think more coaches that are unfettered and go on to college football, social media situations and say what they think are great for the sport. And that's awesome. They've done a great job acquiring talent in the last couple of years. Defensively, they've been solid. Luke Altmyer is one of the best quarterbacks, not just in the Big Ten, but in the country. Again, it's going to be an 11 a.m. start. Again, you're thinking about a likelihood of a team that's going to be undefeated. It's going to be a house that is buzzing. And literally, there's not much else to do in Champaign other than get drunk that early in the morning if you're a fan. So, that's been a place traditionally where Ohio State fans have been able to take over the stadium. And it'll be interesting to see if Illinois is able to withstand that this year because, both of those teams are going to be in a position to be fighting for a Big Ten championship berth at the midpoint of the season. Illinois is going to have some advantages, I think, in the fact that their schedule is probably not quite as daunting as Ohio State's is. They play a handful of teams that are not really going to put them in a position where they're getting beat up the way Ohio State is. And that's also fine. They play Purdue the week before Ohio State, South Carolina or Southern Cal 2 weeks before. So they're going to, it's more of a, fun freestyle passing game. It's not quite the physical meat grinder that you said. But Ohio State has to play Washington, then Minnesota, then Illinois. So you're going to get beat up a little bit heading into that. And it does set up as a sneaky spot for sure if you're an Ohio State fan. So I would recommend buying tickets for that game now if you're a Buckeye fan before the Illinois fans understand that they may have a chance to pull off an upset that day.
Well, and if it is unbeaten versus unbeaten and Illinois pulls off that win over USC, which I think they will, I mean, the price of tickets for those are going to skyrocket. So grab them now. And yeah, you won't be able to find a hotel room in Champaign. No. I can go
but
ahead.
You don't need to. That's right. The beauty of Illinois is that you can just drive home after the game. You'll get home by midnight or so if you don't stay after. So you just need to find somewhere close enough on Friday night to get you into Champaign by 8:30 or 9 in the morning on Saturday and then drive home.
Are you in agreement then that it is Illinois?
Yeah. I mean, Wisconsin is the other one that I obviously would put on that list, but you know, you talk about the lead in to the Ohio State Illinois game and the lead in to the Ohio State Wisconsin game. If you're talking Minnesota, Illinois, and then Wisconsin, those are three physical matchups. But if you look at what Wisconsin has ahead of the Ohio State game, they play Michigan and Iowa back to back before the Buckeyes game. That's a team that's going to be beat up. And aside from the fact that they might have already surrendered their season at that point, if they lose to Alabama on the 13th and then Michigan and Iowa, it's a real tough slate for Luke Fickell this year. And honestly, the main reason I put Illinois ahead of Wisconsin here is that when we were there 2 years ago, it felt like the entire buzz, atmosphere, energy of Camp Randall was gone. And I don't know why. It was as, I don't want to say disappointing, because obviously and from an Ohio State perspective, I wanted it to be quiet. But like, even when there were moments in that game where Wisconsin had a chance to take momentum away from the Buckeyes, the crowd did not seem to believe they could win. And that was never the case for Ohio State and Wisconsin in, you know, years previous.
I thought it was strange 2 years ago, because it was like, that was my first time at Camp Randall. And I've certainly had a lot of experiences with Wisconsin fans, and I wrote some things a decade ago at ESPN where they weren't very nice and didn't really care for my opinions about the transition, both from Bielema and then Gary Anderson after that, and that I didn't understand Wisconsin, which I guess I don't, if that was only my first visit, because I thought that Wisconsin would have been not feeling like, hey, this is a competitive game against Ohio State. That's cool. Doesn't matter that we're not going to win. This is awesome. Like, we get to do jump around and the game's still competitive. That's really awesome. Great job, Badgers. And I thought that maybe that dissipated the last decade as, I don't know, been them wandering. They weren't fully wandering through the competitive desert. We saw them multiple times matching up with Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship.
2021.
And those Badgers fans were like, really fun to be around, and the atmosphere was festive. Ohio State and Wisconsin going after it and, you know, trying to achieve something special with a Big Ten crown. And it's like, it's weird because that was not the experience a couple years ago. And I don't really think that that will be this year either. I think the Big Ten is a lot more fun when Wisconsin is at its peak. And, you know, we'll get to that maybe later on in thing number three. But
yeah, I was expecting a much more Iowa 2017 environment, or even Purdue 2018 environment when we went back to Wisconsin in 2023, because that was the first time we'd been there in 10 years, right? So, since 2016. So 7 years it had been since Ohio State was there. I think I expected that to be a much more raucous environment than it was. And hopefully those fans bring it this time around, because it makes, as you said, it does make the Big Ten a lot better.
Yeah, that would be awesome. All right. That's thing number one. And thing number two, opening up the entire schedule to you, Berm, what do you think for a matchup creates the best, most fascinating subplot for the game? Can be player, can be coach, can be anything you want. What is a storyline? Let's just say non-Michigan related.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I'm going to remove that from the equation. Non-Michigan, best storyline.
I think it's fair to remove Michigan from the conversation, because obviously that's priority one.
And we have talked about that already in a Three Things Thursday about the big three games on the schedule, Texas,
I mean, and Michigan. It's got to be the Jim Knowles thing, right? Like, I mean, it's got to be. Aside from the fact that Penn State may very well come into Ohio Stadium on the first weekend of November, undefeated, number one or number two in the country. Drew Aller trying to beat Ohio State for the first time in his career as an Ohio guy returning, Jim Knowles returning. Everything else about Ohio State, Penn State is dominant. As one-sided a rivalry as there could be in the last decade, despite the fact that Penn State is always right there nipping at the heels. That's got to be one to me. And then the second is just how Texas handles Ohio State as a visiting team, and what impact Brian Hartline or Matt Patricia have as new defensive coordinators against, or new coordinators against Texas, who for the most part probably had to feel pretty good when you look at the schedule and you say, okay, we just played these guys in January, December. Now we can look ahead and project. We don't know how different Ohio State's going to be. Steve Sarkisian at SEC Media Days was asked a question about Ohio State and Texas and said, you know, we want to go win that game. We want to avenge the loss. Like, they're talking about it, but they know that this is a different team and a different environment. To me, it's a big game. It's obviously a huge game, one of the biggest games of the regular season in college football. But I don't know if the storyline itself goes much beyond that, because there's not a lot of, there's not the Quinn Ewers and Jack Sawyer storyline. There's nothing else. Sure, you have Arch and Julian saying, presumably both going at each other as in their first game as full-time starters. But to me, it has to be Penn State. I mean, that game is going to mean everything for the Nittany Lions this year. And I think also for Ohio State, it's going to be pretty damn important when it comes to the playoff chase.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's Jim Knowles. And I'm curious not just what the reception will be when he walks into the horseshoe, because
I bet it won't be nice.
I don't think it's going to be very nice. I don't know. Don't you think there'll be some percentage of Ohio State fans that want to at least applaud, tip their hat, and say thank you for the national title before they shift over to booing him? There's got to be some.
I hope so. But I don't, you know, I don't know that that's a reasonable expectation. I think that is a NFL mindset, I think, in a lot of ways. You know, if a player returns after winning a championship somewhere, I think it's easier to, like, I was watching that quarterback thing on Netflix with Kirk Cousins this time around, and the way he was received in Minnesota, like, it's like, hey, this isn't your choice, but we appreciated you, and then we'll cheer you in the game, in the pregame, but we're going to boo the hell out of you when you run out of the field when the clock is ticking. I don't anticipate that being the case for Jim Knowles this time around.
Well, I'm not saying that Ohio State's going to put a video montage of Jim Knowles' best moments up on the video board.
I just think that, like, it should have been handled much differently by both sides when the departure happened. And even in the months since, there was an opportunity for that sort of cheering to happen and that sort of thank you bow to everyone that hasn't happened. I don't anticipate that will be nice. But I do think it adds a real layer to things. That is going to be super interesting to watch.
Beyond the pregame, though, I am interested to see how quickly the system that Jim Knowles coaches is able to be instituted by the Nittany Lions and, like, executed at a high level. I've talked to a number of people, not just at Ohio State, but elsewhere, about Knowles, about what Penn State is bringing back over the last couple of weeks, just because we get asked about him a lot, and people ask me, and I say, well, what do you think about his system and the way, because sometimes we move on so quickly and we think back to Jim Knowles' first year and the difficulty at times that Ohio State had, the growing pains in learning it and communicating. And some people that have played high level college football said, well, the book on the Jim Knowles thing is that you're going to hear a bunch of verbiage that's complicated, and it takes a year or two before you fully understand what you're doing. And I don't know if that will be the case for Penn State. They have veteran players. They've had spring. But, you know, you think about the ups and downs and what happened at the end of that first season with Jim Knowles, and he came in under a lot of criticism for, did he blitz too much here? Was he too aggressive there? Did he have the wrong coverage here? What, you know, what happened at the end of the game in this situation? That didn't happen in the postseason run a year ago, but he had a bunch of guys who had spent 2 or 3 years understanding the system, understanding the communication, understanding the terminology. This is not to open up. I don't know if I would even say that I'm skeptical of Penn State being able to learn that quickly under Jim Knowles, because he's a great teacher and he's a great defensive coordinator. There are people that are around the college football world expressing a little bit of uncertainty about that, or at least curiosity about it, which I think is fair. And everyone is looking at James Franklin as well. It's like, well, he's copying the Michigan and Ohio State blueprint and they're retaining the roster. Defense wasn't the issue for Penn State. It was like,
yeah, never has been.
So if it takes if they bring in Jim Knowles and it takes a little bit of time for them to get their feet back under them, the whole thing could crumble apart for James Franklin this year, which frankly won't surprise me in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, but that curiosity around Jim Knowles is well earned. I mean, his stops at Duke, Oklahoma State, Ohio State, like it took a couple of years, as you mentioned, for things to get sorted. So the question is there a way to cheat the system? Is there a way to cut in line? Is there? And I don't know if he'd gotten to Ohio State in 2022 and had a veteran team, if it would have looked so confused at times. So those were all a bunch of very young players who Ohio State was leaning on. As you said, like this past year, they were all veterans. So they, now, was it the fact that they were all veterans that made it look easier? Was it the fact that they were all year three of the Jim Knowles system that made it easier? We don't really know. So Penn State has a ton of returning depth, a lot of senior leadership, a lot of guys that have played a lot of football. So we're going to find out pretty quickly, I think, whether it's Jim Knowles' system in year three that matters, or if it's veterans working in Jim Knowles' system, and it doesn't matter if it's year one, two, or three, because his success, his real success as a defensive coordinator, has come after he's had guys in the system for a while. But it's a chicken or egg situation in a lot of ways. And this will be the first time when we've seen him be put into a position. Like even when he got to Ohio State, he said, I've never had this type of talent before. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out myself how to use it. Now he knows how to use that much talent. But does it matter how long they've been in the system, or does it matter just how veteran they are in general? So I guess we're going to find that out.
Yeah, that game will be in the Horseshoe to kick off November. Looking forward to that. For thing number three, though, if you are going on an Ohio State road trip, let's put this purely in a perspective of vacation or bucket list.
But it has to be this season?
Yeah, this season. The one that you would recommend for anyone to go to. So
Washington, 100%.
100% Washington.
Okay. 100% Washington. Number one, you're not going to play
even,
in very...
You didn't even know that they were in Seattle a couple months ago.
I did. I thought they were like in some suburb. I don't know. But number one, it's the end of September. It's like there's like a 10-week window when it's really ideal to go out to the Pacific Northwest. And that would be right in the middle of that 10-week window. It's a beautiful area to visit. It's a trip that you're going to see things you haven't seen. There's the ocean, there's bluffs, there's forest, there's all those other things. If you can get there a day or two early, the night before that game, the Mariners are playing the Dodgers. Like you're going to have two of the best teams in baseball going at it in a playoff hunt. Like, you know, two of the most exciting players in baseball, and Shohei Ohtani and Cal Raleigh with the Mariners, like playing each other. I think people should go to that game and have a great time. Aside from the fact that everything we've ever heard about Washington Stadium and their fans is that it's one of the toughest places in the country to play. It's a really proud program, a lot of tradition, and a program that's on the ascent under Jed Fish. And I think that it's a no-brainer to go to that game, especially that time of year. If the Washington trip was at the same week of the Purdue trip, I would probably say Wisconsin. But because of the timing of the Washington trip, to me, it's a no-brainer.
Seattle brewery scene is also, I guess it's going to probably make a strong push to be number one in the Big Ten now, yeah. Surprisingly. Although Eugene wasn't bad either. For Tomorrow We May Die, shout out to you all.
Salem. Shout out Salem.
Hospitality in Salem. How about you rank them then? What would be second?
Oh, Wisconsin. I love Madison as a college town. It's awesome. Another thing on the Washington trip, because Ohio State has the week off the week before, I think it does give people a chance to maybe plan a trip that is actually a couple days long and enjoy the Pacific Northwest. So that's something you should definitely do. Wisconsin is number two, because Madison's great.
What does Ohio State's off week have to do with fandom?
Well, Jeez. You know, maybe they're people who travel with the team, like they're the Grateful Dead, and you get more time to go out there. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
They're not playing at home the Saturday before, so you can make it a 2-weekend trip if you wanted. You know what I mean?
Okay. I got
make
you.
It a Saturday to Saturday. Illinois, that game is better to me than the Wisconsin game, but Champaign, as you mentioned, like you can't get hotels there. It's in the middle of nothing. So unfortunately, that can't be on the list. Then Wisconsin. So Washington, Wisconsin. Third would be Ann Arbor. Again, tough spot. The worst part of that is the Thanksgiving weekend, so makes it difficult for people to plan travel. And again, finding hotels, that sort of stuff, is not good there.
That's all about the quality of the game because.
And it's all about the weather. Like you don't know what weather you're getting up there that time of year. So that's also annoying. And again, Purdue, I like West Lafayette as a little college town, I mean, it's a good college town. I'm not trying to badmouth the sun there. No, but I don't need to see the sun. I'm not trying to badmouth the Boilers. I respect them as a school. I think that their fans are actually a lot more passionate and loyal than they get credit for being. But I mean, there is a pretty sizable gap between Washington and Wisconsin on this year's schedule and everyone else.
I'm going to tell the people at New Glarus that you did not want to visit.
We were going to talk about this after the show, but I'm going to need you to make sure. Are you planning on going to New Glarus on Friday?
What do you mean, am I planning?
But you're flying, so I might need to talk to some other people about bringing me back some spotted cow.
Well, I haven't decided. I love to drive, Berm. I'm thinking.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Maybe I'll just cruise on up there and make it a longer week. Because you got the off week after Wisconsin. So, you know, I'll just cruise back and take my time.
That's true.
Load up the back of the CRV with.
What was that place we went to in Madison 2 years ago where we had like those crunch wraps? They had delightful food at that brewery we went to. Remember it? What it was called?
Yeah, but I wasn't able to eat it there. I wasn't able to eat food at that time.
That's your fault. But I want to know what that place was called, because I think I want to make sure people go there. It was a really, like, their beer was okay, but the food was really great. What was it called? Vintage Brewing Company, maybe? No,
it was called this is great content right here that we're
producing. Youngblood.
I think it was Youngblood.
Yeah, their beer was pretty good, but those crunch wraps they had were phenomenal.
Yeah, it was Youngblood for sure. And I did still enjoy the beer, even if I couldn't eat the food. But guess what? That's not a problem anymore. So it's as many brats as I can possibly eat that weekend.
How many brats do you think you can possibly eat in one setting? Because I'm not a brat guy, but how many brats are you putting down? If you had your druthers and somebody just walked up to you with a tray full of brats and they're like, Austin, do your worst. Where do you, like, assuming that modesty and humility has nothing to do with this conversation and you can just absolutely gorge, how many do you think you're being able to put down in your current
after the life changes I've made? I'd probably be hurting after two, which is probably a better state for my overall health than I was 2 years ago on that visit. I wouldn't stress myself to the point of getting to three, I don't believe.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't consider myself like a champion eater of any sort, but sometimes, like when we last weekend, we went to my mother-in-law's for fireworks and a little post 4th of July thing, and she made tacos, and, like, you know, it's just like a traditional size Ortega. Yeah,
well, you are a champion taco eater.
And I know it sounds ridiculous to say, but, like, I could have eaten 25 of them and it would not have mattered, you know? Like, I would have, by the time I finished the 25th, I still would have went, man, I could eat a couple more tacos. Like, it would not have even made a difference. I had seven.
Yeah.
But I could have absolutely eaten three times that amount and not cared. And it's only tacos. Like, I don't feel ever full when I'm eating tacos until, like, well after I'm done eating. So, like, in the midst of the deluge, I could just go ham on these dudes. You know what I mean?
That's unfortunately how I am with beer and not an actual food anymore.
And but pizza. You're that way with pizza too.
That's true. I am that way with pizza. That's a great point. I could eat it every single day. And I wish that I did, to be totally honest with you.
You can eat pizza at every meal, and you can still have a breakfast pizza. You can have lunch pizza. You can have dessert pizza. There's no other food item that is such a wonderful vehicle for any meal time or place as pizza.
This has really devolved into a Freaky Friday on a Three Things Thursday.
Oh, my apologies. Well, that's the end of our show.
Well, two and a half weeks ago, we got to the end of the show and you're like, hey, Austin, aren't you going to talk about the changes that you're making with where you're writing these days? And I was like, I don't know. I wasn't planning to, but sure. Let's talk about Letterman Row. And guess what? Now it's your turn.
Yeah. What are you going to talk about? I'm also now back at Letterman Row and on three and excited. You know, as I was writing down why I was willing to make that decision again after a couple of years of what started as a very exciting venture back in 2021 that turned into a nightmare slash disaster. Sometimes you have to grow up and acknowledge some things on your own part. And I probably was a bit stubborn and just glad to be back at On Three and Letterman Row and working with you, but also with Spencer, also with Mick Walker, who, I mean, on the recruiting side of things, and I hope we're going to have Mick on talking stuff with me at times, and we're going to work on trying to make that happen. I just think Mick is, he gives me an opportunity to work with somebody who feels the same way about the recruiting industry that I do, which I've never had the opportunity to really work with someone like that. And so that is really exciting for me. And obviously working with you and Alex Gleitman, who I worked with 15 years ago at 11 Warriors when we were both trying to figure out what this industry was about. So it's an exciting change. I know people have questions about it. Feel free to find me on Twitter at Berm, and I put my email address in there if you have questions or you want some clarity on things or you want to ask me why I handled certain things certain way. I'm more than happy to dive into those things with you because I think people deserve as much clarity as I can provide on these matters, and I'm happy to do it. But ultimately, I'm just glad to be back in something that we built because, you know, and I said it at the time, and it was probably viewed by most as hyperbole in some manner. When I left there in June of 2022, like that was right after losing both my parents, and like leaving Letterman Row, and as much as we put into it personally, felt like a major punch in the gut when it happened. And so it's not about righting wrongs, but it is about both sides of that public dispute that happened 3+ years ago saying, hey, this is kind of silly. We've all grown up. We've all matured. Let's move on. And excited to be there and hope to be there for the next, I don't know, 15 years and be done.
And as I said 2.5 weeks ago, and we'll reiterate now, this does not change anything in terms of the Austin and Berm show. We are locked in for the long-term foreseeable future with 10TV, 10TV Plus, 97.1 The Fan. The show's not changing channels. It's not going away. Yeah. And in fact, it's only going to get bigger and better as the season ramps up here, starting on Monday as we head out to Las Vegas for Big Ten Media Days. And then what do we have? 15 days until camp starts. 14 days. Exactly 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
Since today's a Three Things Thursday for camp opening at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. So can't wait. A lot of exciting things in the works for everyone here. And we appreciate you spending part of your day with us on this Thursday, a Three Things Thursday on the beat. He is Berm. I am Austin. We'll talk to you later.
Ice Cube's Big 3 is back. The most competitive basketball league on earth is on CBS this Saturday. Big 3 All-Star Dwight Howard and the LA Riot take on Greg Monroe and the Dallas Power. Then Coach Rick Mahorn, Sensation Nazir Kaur, and the Detroit Amps look to protect home court against back-to-back MVP Michael Beasley and the defending champs Miami 305. The game played the way you love. Watch live Saturday on CBS at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, and catch replays on BET.
Yay, yay!